Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Mother's Day this weekend, and there are many out there who might not be celebrating for their own personal reasons. It could be that they have lost their own mother, or it's too painful to mark the day for others. It could be that they are away from their children or have experienced the loss of a pregnancy or child. And then for others who long to be mothers but are unable, it can be a painful reminder of what might have been. Claire Walsh is an author and podcaster who has candidly shared her journey of fertility treatments on her social media. And she's also talking about it on an upcoming episode of her podcast. And Claire joins me now. Good afternoon, Claire.
Thanks for having me here.
Good to talk to you again. We spoke to you before about something else. We might come back to that later on. Yeah. Now, the name of your podcast is?
Scared Shitless.
Yes. Where you deal with fear.
Yeah. I kind of look at fear and how it shows up in our lives and different ways it kind of sneaks its way in. And when I was looking at episodes to do, I kind of couldn't not include this topic because it is one of my big fears. Mm. So if I'm inviting listeners to look at, really start challenging themselves at what's holding them back, I can't not do the same thing myself. And the whole kind of thinking behind it is to identify those feelings of nerves or self-doubt and then to try and kind of push beyond it. So right now I'm feeling really nervous. I'm scared to talk about this really intimate topic, but it doesn't mean that I shouldn't find a way through.
Okay. Well, let's get your story then. Let's, because it's always a story, isn't it?
Because always a story.
Yeah, your child is not by choice.
Child is not by choice. It's a really brutal club to be part of, to be dead honest with you. Yeah, I'm 42 and I started trying to have a child just before I turned 40, you know, with my husband. So I wasn't naive.
When did you meet your husband?
I met my husband, I'm going to get in trouble, 37 or 38, around that time.
Yes.
So, you know, I certainly was that little bit older. We weren't, you know, school sweethearts or anything like that.
And did you have the chat about children?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would have been fairly straight up. This is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. Do our views match on this?
Right.
So,
and you're of an age.
I am of an age, unfortunately. And I think there's no getting away from that.
So it gives that conversation a little bit more importance.
Definitely. Like, I could have gotten into a relationship for a couple of years and then we realise we're not on the same page. And then I would have been, you know, so you want to have these conversations from the outset, or certainly I did. Mm.
So for you, it was a deal breaker.
Yeah,
for some people
absolutely.
It isn't, but for you
for some people it isn't, but for me, I always imagined being a mother. It was never a question mark in my head. It was always something I wanted. I knew that without a doubt.
Yeah. And Boody.
Boody. Yeah.
Boody. Is that short for...
It is short for name, but I'm going to butcher it if I say it. Abdel Rahman. He's Egyptian.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Boody then was on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Family is really important to him.
Yeah. Okay. So that's fine. And you're looking at a future of...
Yeah. And we're just about to get married and, you know, we start trying. And it's really funny. You kind of... You start trying and months go by and nothing happens. And I thought I was being really proactive. So I booked in an appointment to just start the explorations. And I don't know if it was a mixture of smugness or naivety, but I thought by the time the appointment came around, I probably wouldn't need it because I'd be pregnant. And these appointments kept on coming up. You know, there would be another one with a consultant or, you know, for some sort of exploration or exam down the road, 6 weeks down the road, and you pop it in your diary and you'd kind of think to yourself, I'll probably have to cancel it because everything will have worked out. Mm. And when you're kind of 6, 7, 8 months into that, things begin to feel a little bit different.
So what was going through your head?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, we were having appointments, we were consulting with doctors and, you know, IVF is always kind of on the table at that point, or certainly it's been put on the table and you do think we won't need it. But I do remember a particular weekend, and it was around the time or shortly after my book came out. So it felt like going from one whirlwind into the next. But that weekend, that realization of, this might not happen for us the way it does for so many other couples. We might have to get extra help. Mm. We might have to spend quite a lot of money. We might have to invest so much of ourselves to extend our family. And that that weekend, I don't think I'll ever forget.
So was there test results or something, Claire?
No, this is the whole thing. Well, certainly for me, it's unexplained infertility. And I think this is really, really common. We don't always find the reason. There's no reason on paper why I wouldn't conceive.
Because we like reasons. We love reasons because
then we can do something about it. But the not knowing, it's really, really tough. But also it then leaves the door open for hope. If we don't have a reason why it shouldn't happen, that means it might. So you kind of keep on going and you get caught up.
And you hear all the stories, don't you?
Oh, you hear all the stories. And you know what? Those stories are important, but IVF, in my scenarios, that's a treatment I pursued. It's not always the silver bullet. Mm. And in fact, it isn't a lot of the times.
And were you sharing this with friends, family, or is it a very private thing?
My husband's really private. I process things by talking. But I found the more I got into it, the less I spoke about it, because you're really, really vulnerable and people mean well, but they often, I think people want to solve. People want to say, you know, I have a cousin and she's 72. She's got three children and they're all one. You hear all these stories. And you hear the stories about, and they adopt it and then they have children naturally. Exactly. Have you tried going on a holiday or relaxing or having a glass of wine? And you're kind of gritting your teeth and going, if it was that easy.
They mean well. People mean well.
Of course they mean well. But I do think there is a really big gap around the understanding of what that person is going through. Mm. And it does require a lot of grace to hear the intention.
And of course, we live in a world now where, you know, we feel that we can solve most things.
Of course.
Like back in the day, it would have, you know, you would have just, that's our lot.
That's it, exactly. But you know what, Ray? Like, I find myself, if someone comes to me and they say, Claire, I'm really struggling with this, I automatically roll up my sleeves and I'll start Googling and I go, right, what can we do? So I understand that need to solve, to fix.
So it was IVF then?
So we pursued IVF treatment.
When did you have your first round of IVF?
First round was August of that year, so that's 2023. And that didn't go very well. I didn't respond well at all to the drugs. So the cycle was cancelled quite early on. And that was, again, I remember that phone call quite clearly. It was a Friday afternoon. And again, it's another inkling, another, I suppose, red flag, I think the kids call it, of, oh, I don't think this is going to be straightforward.
Yeah, because the success rate with IVF isn't huge.
It's still quite low. And, you know, I remember telling people at the start, you know, we're going to try IVF, and their reaction is, that's really exciting. And I get the idea of it, but the reality of IVF is not exciting.
I don't know if everybody understands what you have to go through.
No, they don't.
What are the steps?
Oh, gosh. So there's lots and lots of consultations. And I think before you get to the consultation period, and I speak on my episode this week of the podcast with Helena Tuberty, and she speaks about this with such an articulate manner and with such expertise. By the time you get to the clinic, you've probably spent thousands of euro in doctor's appointments, in different explorations, let's call them. So you're already kind of in the deficit financially and probably emotionally. So by the time you get to the clinic, and let's say you settle on your clinic, you settle on your treatment plan, and then you go to the chemist with your prescription and you come home with a big bag of drugs. And in that bag of drugs are a load of injections.
Right.
And it's funny, I think that's the idea people have of IVF. They'll see it on TV shows or whatever it is. And in my head, that was the scariest part.
Just to get your body ready.
Yeah, exactly. So it's called stimulation you know, stimming. So, you know, I was I'm terrified of injections anyway, so I really wasn't looking forward to that part. But for any women listening who are about to start IVF, that part is absolutely fine.
Mm.
You adapt to it really, really quickly. You become a pro really, really quickly. And that's another really hard part of the whole process, is you're suddenly dropped into this world that has its own language, its own protocols, its own things you have to become really adept at really quickly because the stakes are so high.
Yeah. So you prepare your body and it is all about you.
Yeah.
And then at some stage, then they decide.
So you prepare your body.
To harvest. They use words like harvest.
Yeah. What's it? Retrieval. Egg retrieval. That's it.
Sorry, egg retrieval.
No, I think harvest has been used in some contexts.
Yes.
So you do your stimulation. That can last kind of from 10 to 17 days. I'm sure there's variations on that. And along the way, you're going into the clinic. You're getting, you know, internal scans. So they're monitoring your follicles. Are they growing? Is there enough growing? And then they're also doing blood tests to measure hormones. So, you know, everything is being monitored. And the goal is to get to a place that you have enough follicles at a decent size for egg retrieval.
Uh-huh.
I didn't make it to egg retrieval that first time round.
Okay.
I did make it to egg retrieval at a later point, but fell at the next hurdle. And then the next time we did it, we fell at the hurdle after that.
So you're getting a little bit further each time.
Yeah.
How many treatments did you do, rounds of it?
This is a really funny, I was kind of trying to count them. I've started 7 cycles.
Oh, that's a lot.
Started them. I didn't get very far into some of them and got further along the way. We kind of had, I call it like a false finish, because we said we were done. This time last year, actually, it was exactly March, just after St. Paddy's Day, we said we were done. We had had an egg retrieval, and getting that step further was a little bit harder. It became that little bit more tangible. That sense of loss, oh, I think I'll remember that one again for years and years to come.
So when you're going through it, you must be hyper aware of your body. Are you thinking, oh, that means something?
Oh, completely.
Something. Yes.
And you're willing yourself not to go onto Google. You know, you're Googling every symptom. It feels crazy, like the drugs. They're no joke.
Mm-hmm.
You're injecting, you know, quite a lot of synthetic hormones into your body. So that comes with its own set of side effects. It's a really, really, well, for me anyway, all this is my experience. But for me, it was a really weird, surreal, stressful time.
And how were you told each time that it hadn't been successful?
You're not really. Again, it goes back to those success rates. You know, it is expected for it to take a few rounds. So when the first one doesn't work, they're not getting terribly worried. You're moving into the next round again. But with each round comes a cost. And, you know, the financial cost of IVF, I think, is only one part, because the emotional, the physical and the mental cost is also considerable.
And it must put pressure on a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't think I could have anticipated the toll it takes. Because, again, the stakes are so high.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about your chance of being a mother or your chance of being a father. And then you're talking about, like, of being a grandmother and a grandfather. Like, this will affect us for the rest of our life. This will put us in a category of parents or not parents. This is so huge. So you're putting everything in. So naturally, it's gonna implode from time to time. You know, I've been lucky with my husband. You know, he's a really terrific guy. But it definitely, it caused a strain, and we had to look at it. There was one point where I thought, is this gonna implode? Like, is my marriage going to be the ultimate price I pay? And since I've started speaking about it, more and more people have reached out to me saying, we separated after it. It was too much for us. And I can understand why.
Because you have to call stop at some stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
And who's calling that? And is there agreement?
Yeah.
Or is somebody just agreeing because it's a compromise? And is that a wound that's going to open up later on? All of those things.
Like, you've hit the nail on the head with each of those things. You know, it's a constant discourse. We made the decision after our cycle last March to stop. We looked at our odds. We looked at my very specific symptoms and reactions and everything. We're working with a really wonderful doctor as well at this point, but we had to lay it all out and weigh up the cost. And I don't mean the financial element. And the thought that came into my head really clearly was, I choose us. I choose me and him. Now, we went on to do two other cycles because it's forever is a long time. Mm. So we sat with that over the summer and we really struggled with it. So we went again. And
it's probably all that superstitious stuff. You know, they thought we'd finish and now we're just going to do it and it might be lucky and all
that. But
those.
Of course, because hope is probably the most complicated element of the whole thing.
So then when it was obvious that this was it, like that's a big...
That's a big one.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because this, as you say, it's forever.
Yeah.
Not only you're not going to be a parent, you're not going to be a grandparent.
Like it's so much.
Yeah.
Like for us, that phone call wasn't that long ago. It was October 14th. And I switched into doing mode. I was working on the podcast at the time, something I feel really passionate about, I'm really proud of. And I definitely think creativity is a bit of an antidote to what I was going through. And I needed something in my life to be moving forward because everything else was on pause or had been on pause. So I kind of went into go, go, go mode. And then Christmas happened and we were gentle with ourselves. You know, I have nieces and nephews that I adore the bones of them, but it is bittersweet. It is bittersweet.
So what's that like then?
What's that like?
Because it's raw and you're around people who have had children.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously friends or people you know are having children. There's announcement of pregnancies, all of that sort of thing. That for most people who aren't you or people who can't have children, that's fine. That's all. And people celebrate with everybody about it. But
and
for you,
as
it's different.
They should. And it's funny, pregnancy announcements sometimes are triggering, I guess is the word. And then other times not. You know what? A pregnancy announcement, at least that makes sense why that might be upsetting. It's the other things that really floor you. I was watching a TV show and a cow gave birth. And I was bawling. Like, I'd never have anticipated that. It was just entertainment, you know. And there I was sobbing on the couch in January of this year. Like, that came out of nowhere. So it's lots and lots and lots of these little events that just come out of nowhere in relation to being around kids. Like, it's really hard. I adore and I get such a kick out of my nieces and nephews. They're such characters and I want to be around them. But there, of course, there's elements when I see my sisters and their family, and you just look. You can't not think that's never going to be me.
And you told people who listen to your podcast that you were going to be discussing this, and you read out a long list of the reaction you got. I just have some of them here. Don't belong. These are just key phrases.
Fear of not belonging.
Never find a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Less of a woman. The club I'm in, not by choice.
Yeah.
And that thing that been asked, do you have children? You know, that's and you can't really get annoyed at people when they ask you that.
No, you can't.
Or is that a question that nobody should ask anybody?
I think you probably shouldn't ask. I don't know. Like, you know what? I'm in two minds. Like, everyone should have a bit of leeway to ask something clumsy because what is worse is people saying nothing. So if you're going to give permission, if you want people to talk about it, they have to have permission to say something
and
a bit
clumsy. How would you
clumsy.
Respond, Claire?
It really depends on the day, the minute, the moment. You know, normally I can smile and say, I don't. Full stop.
That's it.
And that's it.
And you're not sharing anymore.
And that's it. You know, like I also don't want someone to feel, you know, uncomfortable or awkward. But it is, you know, the reason, like, would I choose to talk about this really intimate and personal element of my life? Probably not. But the reason why I am is because I don't think there are enough people doing it, and there is a huge cohort of women who feel alone
another
and excluded.
Word that, exactly. Another word that came up over and over again was this feeling of being alone.
Yeah, that isolation. I would never have understood what that's like before. I would have had an idea, but the real life experience is quite incredible. And like, you know, you read out a couple of those things. I put out the call on social media and also in an online group that I'm in. I'm still getting replies. So I asked them for their fears. So again, linking in with the theme of the podcast, I asked for the fears around fertility journey, fertility treatment, infertility, and their journey to motherhood. I got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of responses from women all over the world. And reading that list that I do at the start of the podcast, which is out on Wednesday, I wanted it to feel long because that's about a quarter of those of the responses. And the point I make is, you know, if you were to ask a woman who is experiencing, you know, who's on their, let's call it, fertility journey, if you ask them at any point in the day how they're doing, and a lot of people don't, for fear of upsetting them, but if you were to ask them that, chances are there are 50 things rushing through their head like a ticker tape that describe, you know, fear of not being enough, fear of not being a real woman, fear of not, of people thinking that you don't want a family bad enough, fear of not being accepted, fear of the financial toll, the toll on your marriage, and so on. It is relentless.
And there's no real answer. There's no one size fits all.
No.
People are going to deal with it in different ways.
Of course. And, you know, I think that's why this conversation maybe it is useful to have, because it just opens it up. There is no solution. No one person can sit with me and go, right, Claire, we're going to solve this right now. All you can do is sit with me. And, you know, when asked, you know, how do I feel? Most of the time I say exhausted, because if you imagine what it's like to have that ticker tape running through your head, those fears, and then have to put on a smile and go and interact with the world when your identity and so much about yourself is feels compromised. It's really challenging.
I suppose over time you have to assume a new identity, don't you? Not yeah. Claire who wants to have children.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
Claire who
absolutely.
Can't have children. And is it a, like grieving? I don't know if you've grieved.
It's absolutely. And this is why speaking with Helena on the episode was terrific, because firstly, she has such expertise and understanding, but she gave me permission to grieve. Mm. And I think we have ideas of what loss is and we have ideas of what merits grief. But this very particular, I suppose, brand of loss or grief doesn't have a public expression.
No, you're grieving what you thought you would have.
Yeah, yes. You know, we're grieving the eggs that didn't make it. Yes. We're grieving, I don't know, right. That bruised belly yes. I had for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months.
Yeah. I'm emailing from New York City, originally from Limerick. I'm listening to your interview with Claire Walsh. I can relate to everything she says. Mm. I too always expected to be a mammy, but it did not happen. There's definitely a very big lack of understanding around what it's like to be trying and nothing happening.
Yeah.
To say the least, it's a very lonely place to be. I'm turning 55 now, and it's still a very big loss in my life and my husband's life that we did not have children. We tried it all, but all in vain. A bittersweet. We now live in New York City, and we work at reminding ourselves of the other positives we have in our life. We moved here for a new start, a new chapter in our life, and it's good. Great interview. I admire Claire's honesty. There you go.
Thank you.
So Scared Shitless is the podcast, and the podcast where you address this.
It's coming out on Wednesday.
And Helena Tuberty, who's a fertility coach, is on the podcast with you. So if advice or...
I don't know if I can give advice, but certainly, you know, there are supports out there. There isn't many, but there are supports. And I think I was nervous about speaking about it because I kind of felt like, oh, am I making a bigger deal out of it than it warrants? But it is a big deal. It is absolutely a big deal. So if there are women out there listening, the first thing I'd say is don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. Advocate, get support, whether that is checking in with a counsellor or, you know, someone like Helena, or listening to a podcast. There's a terrific American one called Infertility Feelings. And I certainly found that incredibly helpful. And again, it just lessens that sense of isolation a little bit.
Yeah. I've no children, and my mum died in July. Mother's Day is not a happy day for me. And Claire is such a wonderful, brave woman. I'm crying in the garden with empathy and love from an old man in County Meath. So there you go. He obviously has some experience as well that he shares with you. Claire, thanks so much. Just a reminder, the podcast, Scared
Shitless,
is out on Wednesday. And you deal with fear, and it's on its second season. And
yeah, it's on its second season. I've had some terrific people in chatting, and we look at all sorts of fear, and more importantly, how you can move through them.
Claire Walsh, thank you so much. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.